Hello, everyone. Good evening and welcome to the Huff stage. I may welcome you to some binging. Binging on data, binging on drug checking data. And our next speaker is C3O, I practiced. And he will tell us much more about it, about this data stuff and what it has to do with how society works. A warm welcome and a big applause for our speaker.
Thank you, thank you. Oh, yeah. All right, thanks for coming. My name is Christopher, or C3O online and at Chaos Events. I used to be associated with, used to be associated with these labels and organizations and projects. Is there anyone here who used to have a Soup.io account? Anyone? Soup.io? Is anyone? Yes, yes, yes. Ooh, old times. Okay. Anyway, these days I'm associated with these projects, which are mainly focused on queer sexual health and harm reduction in Berlin. And some of the work I will show was produced with Sidekicks Berlin, so I wanted to mention that. First of all, I want to start with a disclaimer. I'm going to talk about psychoactive substances, most of which are illegalized, and I want to make clear that I'm not encouraging the use of psychoactive substances. If you do decide to use them, please practice harm reduction measures. You can please look up information about substances before you do them, for example, on Sidekicks.Berlin. And make sure you stay aware that drugs aren't a sustainable solution for any kind of problem you might have, even though sometimes they give that impression for a while. So let's talk about drug checking. These cities in Europe offer drug checking services, which is where you can drop off a sample of a substance you have, and they will analyze it for contents, purity, adulterants, anything potentially dangerous or toxic. And since about a year and a half ago, Berlin has also launched a drug checking service, which is amazing. And it took like decades worth of lobbying by some very dedicated people to make this happen. And it was made possible by an agreement in place between the city and the forensic laboratory that does the actual tests, and the police agreed not to bother people when they drop off substances. So it's a great success that we have this, and it's city funded. But in this talk I will mostly use data from Drug Checking Berlin, but also related projects in Germany and Switzerland, Austria and Switzerland. So this is what their website looks like. So how does it work? You drop off your substance and you get an individual result, which you have to pick up by telephone a couple days later. And if the result is in some way concerning, they also do publish public warnings. So a highly dosed pill or a mislabeled substance. But they don't publish unproblematic data. So it's not, they don't really have open data in any way. And by just looking at the warnings, of course, we can't tell what percentage, for example, of substances are misdeclared if we don't know the unproblematic results. So that's a little caveat and a minor drawback, I feel. I feel it should all be open data. So their data are these warnings. And if you click this link, you get this beautiful page of about 75 warnings. And then at the bottom, there's like an archive link for the next, I don't know, 50 warnings. And it seems to be at random intervals that they copy paste the warnings into a new page in their content management system. And there's no search function over all the test warnings they've published, for example. And there's a basic filter function, but only within this one page. And it's a 15 megabyte web page, so hopefully you have a good internet connection. So it's not ideal, technically. And if you click one of these warnings, you get this light box where you can scroll down and see the actual results. The issue is, though, that there is no unique link for any warning. So you can't really share them with friends. If you got the same pills as someone and you tested yours, it's not really indexed by Google, so it's not really the best way of publishing this data. Also, the formatting is pretty random. So it's obviously some Word document that's copy-pasted into the content management system. Sometimes substances will be called by nicknames, sometimes by chemical names. The same color will be described as pink or rosa in different times. There's typos sometimes, and the HTML is very inconsistent that they publish here. So I wanted to look not just at the warnings, but at aggregate data and see what trends we can find in this data. And so I did what I guess some people in this audience would have done. I wrote a little scraper that parses all the warnings into a database. Very shoddy code, but it does work. And so let's look at what we can learn about current party drug issues from this data. And we're going to start with the one that got the most public attention in the media in Germany over the last year. Okay, you have to read the subtitles. I do want to mention right away that the reason there was this much attention were some tragic deaths of young people who apparently, supposedly, took blue Punisher pills, and I don't want to make light of that at all. But I do want to fact check the information they just gave us. But before we get into that, can anyone maybe explain what ProSieben was trying to tell us with these icons here? Because I can't figure out the relevancy of this. I don't know. That aside, okay, blue Punishers. If we look at Berlin's data, we see that blue Punishers are by far the most tested pill design, ecstasy pill design, of the 300 pills they tested in the year and a half. Now, so it's more than the next five combined. That has several reasons, one of them being the media attention and this story being that they're particularly dangerous, so people are more inclined to get them tested. But also before that media hype happened, they were the most tested pill. So they're just also the most prevalent ecstasy pill in Berlin nowadays. So let's make a graph and see what the results, or a histogram, how much active substance, MDMA, was found in these blue Punisher pills. And then we get this distribution. For reference, like this is a typical dose for one person of MDMA, and so pills, the blue Punishers generally range between one and two doses, with the average being about one and a half. But there is an outlier here, and there's a surprisingly large spread. So why is that? I wanted to look not just at the abstract aggregate data, but the actual pills to try to find out why that might be the case. So let's replace this graph with the actual pictures, which they thankfully provide. And if we zoom in, we can tell but there's not one blue Punisher, there's many blue Punishers. We can see slightly differing molds used here, so there must be multiple producers. They're all blue-ish. They all show the Punisher logo, which, by the way, is blatant copyright infringement. But yeah, at least there's at least five different molds that I identified here. But what I was very surprised by is that there's no pattern in this data. I was expecting one mold to be highly dosed and the other to be not very highly dosed, but there is no clear pattern here. So next, I looked at compared Berlin's results with the results in Austria and in Switzerland to see if there's any regional differences. So this is the Austrian blue Punishers. Roughly similar, there's an interesting peak around 200 that Berlin doesn't show. But like, we have to be aware that this is a very small sample of the many, many, many pills taken every weekend in these cities. This is over a year and a half. So this might be within like the statistical error you could expect. But if we look at Switzerland, there's a different distribution. So, I mean, everything's more expensive in Switzerland. I guess they also get more for their money. No, but so this points towards ecstasy pill production being quite local. So not only are there many blue Punishers, but it varies from region to region. So how can multiple producers create the exact same pill? I mean, of course, they could make their own molds or 3D print them, but it's easier. You can just go to Chinese websites and buy exactly that mold for $40. And if you're familiar with ecstasy pills going around, there's several more in this picture that are familiar. So even the production of these pills is a mass-produced product. So there will be multiple producers of every specific mold. Now, I wanted to look into the history, how blue Punishers came to be this significant and prevalent. And so the first test results we find are from 2018, where these warnings were published by drug-checking organizations that these pills are extremely highly dosed, which is true. They were around 300 milligrams, which is very high. But of course, the issue with these warnings is, as soon as they reach their intended audience, they become advertisements. So if you're aware that they're highly dosed, that just means you're getting more for your money, and you can just take less of it, and like you want these pills, so they become sought after and develop a reputation. So that creates a demand for these pills. And then, of course, someone will fill this demand, so it will create additional supply. Other people will start covering, like ripping off the pill with different production values. So if we look at the graph over time, more and more Blue Punishers got tested every year since then. But the average MDMA content dropped rapidly. So how does this compare to the average MDMA pill or ecstasy pill? So I found two data sets, one from Switzerland and one from the EU in general, from the EU Drugs Agency. And there we can see that, in fact, between 2015 and 2020, there was quite a rapid rise in average MDMA amount in ecstasy pills. But then since then, it's kind of leveled off again, or the peak appears to have been reached. Now, why did that rise happen? We can only speculate. One factor was probably that around the 2010s, a new way of synthesizing MDMA was found that made it cheaper and easier, less smuggling involved or something like that. So more supply is probably one reason. And the other one probably is these drug checking warnings creating advertisements for particularly highly dosed pills, and then the producers kind of competing with each other because they wanted to have the pill that the warnings are published about, because that made their sales increase. So comparing the Blue Punishers here, yeah, we see that they used to be extremely exceptional, and these days the average Blue Punisher is just another average ecstasy pill, with one difference: there's a broader spread. And there's that makes the drug checking results less predictable for the pill that you have, because there's so many producers, you have no idea how highly it's dosed unless you actually bring it to drug checking. So they are kind of dangerous in a special way, but not in the way that the media told us. Once I had looked at the Blue Punishers, I wanted to look at all the other pills also. So let's see if this works. So I made this little webpage where I can explore the data of all the pills. And you can flip them around, and there's these little histograms here of the distribution, how strong they are. And then some interesting patterns emerge. Like for these Netflix pills, you immediately see there's two different molds, different ratios here that you should probably separate in this data. For this Berghain pill, it's interesting because the sign, like the design suggests local production maybe in Berlin, but they're all over the place. So it must be either multiple producers or producers who are very sloppy and not very consistent with what they do. And then there's others that are more consistent. There's some where there's like one outlier, but if you look closely, you see there's a difference in the mold. This one doesn't have a border. The other ones do. It's a similar case here with these Heineken. One of the outlier is different. So maybe describing pills by just shape and color is not enough. So yeah, the more you scroll down, the less predictive it becomes. This one was censored here. But to clean our palate from having seen this pill, we have to scroll further to get to this one. No. All right. Back to this. Okay, so what's the harm reduction tip we can derive from this? Avoid the most popular pill designs, because they will be the least predictable. You really have to buy multiple pills and bring one to drug checking if you want to know how strong your Blue Punisher is. And standard ecstasy harm reduction tips apply. Take maximum half a pill and wait at least an hour for it to kick in before you would consider redosing. Okay, next topic. These are cat leaves that are chewed in some cultures in mostly East Africa for their stimulating effects, not unlike coca leaves in South America. And if you synthetically recreate the active ingredient in these leaves, you get cathinones. Those are short-acting stimulants that have been exploding in popularity. They're quite habit-forming, so comparable maybe to cocaine. So over time, most people who get into the habit of taking these substances find themselves losing control over the amount and the frequency of use. But they've become super popular club drugs in Berlin, maybe even the most popular in certain scenes. And to understand how that happened, let's hear from someone, or read the subtitles from someone who played an important, supposedly played an important role in popularizing cathinones. This is Dr. Z. Or should I like do a funny voice? No. So yeah, that's how we get from the substance cathinone to the family of cathinones, because there's 1,000 little variations you can make to create a new substance that might still be legal somewhere in countries that only ban very specific substances and not whole classes of substances, like, for example, Germany does. So when supposedly he started exporting and selling this as a party drug, was around the time that ecstasy quality was dropping in the UK, because the police was very successful in limiting the supply of precursor chemicals before this new way of synthesizing it was discovered. And so people started having bad experiences with ecstasy tablets, and apparently also cocaine quality was pretty low at the time, so that opened the market to some replacement substance, and in came these still legal cathinones, disguised as research chemicals or bath salts or plant food, not for human consumption, wink, wink. And the most popular of these turned out to be methadone. So methadone shares some effects from a stimulating substance like amphetamines and a serotonin-releasing substance like MDMA. And it became a popular substance until, of course, it was banned shortly thereafter. Great achievement. So the EU achieved this, and that was the end of it, and no one ever took cathinones again. Whoops, 3-MMC showed up. Just a tiny little adjustment to the molecule, the position of one part of it, but it had notably different effects, and some people preferred that version of it, supposedly less of a come down. So these two variants became very popular on their own, and to this day, dealers in Berlin usually offer both of these, or claim to offer both of these, and they will ask you, do you want the 3 or the 4? But more than any other substance, drug checking data from Berlin shows us that what you get isn't what they claim you get. So up there we have the two substances people think they're getting, and down here is the ever-changing garden variety of random cathinone variations, and this is the distribution between them. So you do get something different if you buy 3-MMC versus methadrone, but you mostly don't get 3-MMC or methadrone, which is odd, like that they're so specific about claiming to name the chemical substance, but then it's all a lie. So yeah, this causes many problems. So this is a more traditional visualization of the same data. First of all, most of these replacements are completely unknown when they show up, and there's very little scientific research about them, and even the experience reports, there's not much knowledge, and people aren't even aware what they're taking. So I spent a bunch of time researching among the few papers that I could find that had tested these substances, and among user experience reports to kind of fill out this graph of how these substances differ, also in their potency. And that's one of the dangers, that they have different potency. So in one case, if it's less potent, you might not feel enough that you're expecting to feel. But then also if you dose more to compensate for that, to try to achieve that effect, there's a higher risk of side effects that might show up. And on the other hand, if you take a substance that's way more potent, of course you might overdose. And that's especially a risk with NEP, which is N-ethylpentadrone, or monkey dust, MDPHP or alpha-PHIP, which are way more powerful cathinones and which have the property of causing anxiety and maybe even psychotic episodes if you overdose them. So this would be a very problematic mix-up. But even for the ones that are dosed similarly, we don't know much about their long-term effects, their toxicity. There's this one paper that found like serious risk to humans maybe from this very popular replacement for CMC. When I emailed the researcher, he told me that actually the mice he tested it on died when he gave them enough of it. But the paper didn't want to include, the European journal didn't want to include that because out of concerns for animal welfare. So weird note. But anyway, but we're not sure, no one's tested it on humans, we're not sure how much worse it really is than 4-MMC. No comparative studies have been done, but this is kind of concerning. And if we look at the distribution over time, so what people got when they thought they had 3-MMC, we see this variation here. This is based on very little data, so every month is just a few tests, but still we can see a rough trend that it used to be mostly this replacement substance 3-CMC, and then something changed and a new substance appeared, 2-MMC, that kind of replaced it. Partially, the original kind of came back. So what's the reason for that? The Netherlands, our neighbor, does not have a blanket ban on all cathinones, so they only make specific substances illegal when they become popular. And around that time was when the Netherlands implemented an EU ban on 3-CMC. So the research chemical vendors there switched to something new, something shittier, something more unproven. And because it's just easier to, I guess, smuggle something that's legal in one member state across an inner EU border than to get something illegal from elsewhere, this determines what people in Berlin are actually getting when they buy drugs. But the situation will soon change because the Netherlands are working on a blanket ban of cathinones and other classes of substances that is bound to come into effect in the next couple of months. So that might completely change the situation again. And I mean, I'm all for liberal drug laws, so this is the more draconian version, but it might paradoxically have a positive effect. And the drugs that people take in Berlin bathroom stalls and clubs will again more be determined by which ones they enjoy and which ones are well known and well researched, and less by whatever happens to still be legal in a neighboring country, which is maybe not the best guiding principle. So what's the harm reduction tip here? Hard to really formulate one, but if you do consume cathinones, do so rarely, especially in this situation where you don't know what you're getting. Once a month is a good rule of thumb. And try to test it. If you can't do drug checking, then like from each new batch, take like half a dose, see if anything feels weird, feels particularly strong. But yeah, it's not a perfect method. So if you can abstain, maybe that's wiser. Okay, another topic is another substance that has been rising in popularity, which is 2CB, in the form of these little pills that look like ecstasy pills, but they're smaller and thinner, and they contain a psychedelic. So it's a stimulating psychedelic. People describe the effects as a mixture of MDMA and LSD, so wakefulness, good mood, music appreciation, slight visual psychedelic effects, like maybe the walls start breathing, colors start fading into each other, and so on. But it's very, very dose dependent. So at a low dose, it's more like ecstasy plus some visual effects, and at a higher dose, it can be a full psychedelic trip, including the risk for an unexpected or challenging experience. Also something to know is that this substance can cause nausea in the come-up, especially if you have a full stomach, which, because it's a psychedelic, can like cause some anxiety, also can like ruin your mood. So you should be well prepared if you decide to take this one. But another more interesting trend is that we saw a new substance pop up called Tusi, which is a pink powder. This came from South America, but has recently showed up in Europe as well. It's called Tusi or 2CB, so clearly a reference to the substance we just discussed. But then it's also called pink cocaine, which makes no sense whatsoever. It's a very different substance with a very different effect. So the only thing we really know about Tusi before we look into drug checking data is it's powder and it's pink. Surprise what you're actually getting. They don't tell you what the active substance might be. So it turns out to be a random mix of different things. Most of all, it's going to be a mixture of ketamine and MDMA. And then there's a slight chance that there might be some 2CB in there, probably some caffeine, maybe some other stimulants, cocaine, 3-MMC, something like that. But it varies extremely widely. This is not very popular in Europe yet, so this is only based on like 30 tests. But yeah, the average composition is like, if there's some 2CB, then it's a tiny amount, but it's also quite a potent substance, so maybe that's okay. But yeah, it just varies extremely widely and is unpredictable what you're gonna get if you buy this pink powder, except that it's pink and a powder. One media report that I found a bit curious was, although it's kind of tragic again, but when this member of the boy band One Direction recently passed away, apparently they found that substance in his blood. I don't know, the food coloring, or like what did they find? It's unclear and can't be very accurate. So the harm reduction tip here is maybe avoid random drug blends that are marketed by color. Like, maybe it's just not the best idea. Good business strategy if you're in that business, but as a consumer, don't do that. If you do want to mix drugs, and specifically ketamine and MDMA is quite a popular combination, do look up beforehand potential interactions and be aware that it just generally increases your risk. For example, different durations of action, and yeah, a bit more difficult to predict if you're taking multiple substances at the same time. Okay, I got one more for you. This is Tingle from Selda. And this is Tingle as a 2CB pill. Isn't that satisfying? I found the actual illustration that they must have used. I think it's like it's being turned to stone. Okay, anyway, that's not the point. The point is that on the back, this pill contains a label. It tells you that it's 20 milligrams. That's very convenient. Let's look at the drug checking data. The common pattern when a pill includes a supposed dosage is that it contains way less. In this case, I mean, it's false advertisement, but the dose that's actually inside there is maybe a more advisable dose for people who aren't experienced with that substance and are taking it in a party context. So that's a dose pretty much anyone can handle. 20 would already be challenging to some people. But then the problem is there's also this one here, where there's more in it than it claims. So of course, with the ones that are dosed lower, that creates the problem that it teaches people wrong knowledge. So they think, oh, I took 20 milligrams, didn't feel anything, no problem. And then maybe they come across the pure powdered substance and they take way too much. But yeah, and if it ends up the other way, then that's really dumb. So, and 30 is actually really not a recommended dosage for most people of 2CB. So maybe avoid pills that are as sloppily made as these, or maybe there's more producers than one, possible. But yeah, that's so not to be trusted what they print on the pill. Another interesting case are these Faro pills, of which there are many variants. For a couple years, there have been these ones that say, warning, Faro 240 milligrams, so obviously referring to ecstasy, which would be a decently high dose. And of course, again, it contains way less. That's to be expected. But then, in Vienna, a couple Faros showed up that didn't contain any MDMA whatsoever, but a different substance, which is a psychedelic again, tryptamine. But I mean, it's the same print. The pill also says, warning, 240 milligrams, and 240 milligrams of this substance would be way too much. The typical dose is maybe like 20 milligrams, so if it warned you about 24, that might be more useful, but actually it should be warning you that it's not MDMA. But what I found confusing was that another pill showed up that actually does say, warning, 24 milligrams. But then it's just another MDMA pill containing five times as much as advertised. I am very curious how the hell that happened. But then there's another variant, and maybe that's the least problematic, because it just says, warning, Faro. I don't know, the curse of the Faro, or maybe it's just warning you of these unpredictable pills. So I can't disagree with that one. Yeah, but it could even get worse. This one is the most popular 2CB pill design, which helpfully is labeled 2CB. That's very nice. But then in Switzerland recently, this clone showed up that manages to misspell the actual substance. So not really too trustworthy. So the lesson learned here is don't trust what the pills claim to say. Use drug checking if you want to know what's actually inside. Now, and actually for So in pills, you generally have the biggest problem of not knowing how much is inside. For ecstasy or MDMA, it might be wiser to get MDMA crystals because they're more consistently quite potent and not very adulterated in general. They're generally about 80% pure. And then that's more predictable if you want to hit a certain dose. Or you could also like buy a bunch of pills, crush them all into a fine powder, like bring a little sample of that to drug checking, and then you can calculate by weight the purity, because then you don't have the problem that one pill could be dosed differently than another. But that's a lot of effort, so I don't know if you're interested in that. If you do want to look up test results, my favorite place to do that is, whoops, I pressed one. No, not spoiling the ending. This app, which is free and run by someone as a charitable project, which aggregates drug checking results from all over Europe. So this is the best place to type in Blue Punisher and get a list of recent warnings in your area. So I hope this demonstration has shown you the usefulness of drug checking and the importance of it. And maybe I can use it to demonstrate to those responsible that this data should be more accessible and should be public data, actually. And should be, yeah, the aggregate data is important, the unproblematic data is important, and it should be usable and shareable. Thank you so much. Have fun and be safe.
Okay, wow. That was a rabbit hole. I have questions. No. I leave that up to you, because I'm sure you have some. Yes, I see one there, one there, one there, one there. Whoa. Okay. My other Harold is coming to you. The first raises were here.
Thank you. Hi. Did you do any analysis on ketamine purity or anything like this?
No, the challenge there really is that the unproblematic results aren't published, so I don't know the purity of the substances that of the samples that only contain ketamine, and ketamine is generally not very adulterated, so there's not many warnings published, so I don't know that data. I can try to request it. Actually, what someone should do is send a Freedom of Information request to the Berlin's Municipal Forensic Lab, which does the actual testing, because that should be subject to Freedom of Information requests, and then we could answer your question. Until then, I'm sorry.
Okay, next.
Could you maybe tell us a little bit about the challenges you faced from a statistical perspective?
Well, first of all, I'm not super trained in statistics. So my background is in information design, and then curiosity for the topic. So I'd actually be super interested in people's feedback. I think the dodgiest graph that I showed was the average composition of 2C, because that's such a variation. I don't know if displaying that in a pie chart is a legit way. I think the main challenge also from a statistical point of view is really that, I mean, I'm happy about this data, but it really is a tiny, tiny, tiny sample, and it's not a representative sample either, because there will be bias in which samples people bring to drug checking, which types of people bring their samples to drug checking. And it's just, yeah, everything they tested in a year and a half is probably consumed in backhand in a weekend. So it's kind of questionable what consistent trends we can read from this data, I think is my... But yeah, I think it's at least great to have it around, and I wish there was more of it.
Hi, thank you first for the amazing talk. I have like two tiny questions. First of all, the website you showed with the actual composition, is that available publicly? Or is it just a local one?
I mean, it's a URL on the internet. I wasn't quite sure, so I'm in touch with the people behind in the drug checking team. By the way, there's also a version for 2CB. I don't think I have good internet right now. I was slightly concerned that they might not like me doing this and that would harm my chances of getting my data requests answered. But yeah, you can visit that website.
Okay. And the second one is the graph you showed of the, I think it was the composition of the Blue Punisher pill. and all the other ecstasy pills, it had its peak on 2020, and my first thought was maybe the amount was impacted by the pandemic, you know, because in 2021 the whole city of Berlin was closed, so that would definitely impact the amount of pills tested or produced.
Very possible that that somehow distributed disrupted the market and like caused kind of a reset, but it hasn't really been growing since then, so I don't know, maybe it's just like a natural ceiling was reached and it wasn't worth making them, because the price has been very stable of ecstasy tablets, so maybe it just wasn't worth putting more and more in it. That would be my theory.
Yeah, I have a quick question. So if I got it right, all your data is based on the warnings that have been released?
Generally, yes. Partially, for example, when I showed what's really in 3MMC and 4MMC, that's because I sent them an email and was like, hey, can you please give me the results that didn't cause a warning, so that I know the total. Can you put the microphone back real quick?
So I was just wondering why there are so many pills with fairly low dosages.
If are missing mostly, in the data or something?
No, they are there, like all the 90 milligrams, for example. If it's gathered from the warnings that are supposed to be really
so
high.
So Drugschecking Berlin appears to publish pretty much every pill result. So for ecstasy pills, they do, because they started doing like highly dosed and then extra low dosed, and they were like, let's just all publish all of them. That's my understanding.
Hi, I've got a question regarding the heroin testing there, because since the Taliban takeover, heroin shortage in Europe, and everybody was expecting fentanyl is coming, and now Tagesschau is saying there is fentanyl all over Germany, but they have it from Schnelltests, the fast tests, and they often produce false positives. So if my hypothesis is true, it's false positives, then there shouldn't be positives for fentanyl in the heroin testing. Are there?
Drugschecking Berlin has had zero results positive for fentanyl or any other synthetic opioid in the 2,000 samples they tested so far. So fentanyl has not arrived in the party drug supply in Berlin. They don't test heroin a lot. It does happen, but it's like rare compared to ecstasy tablets, just different group of people and different, like, people who use heroin apparently less motivated to drop something off, wait a couple days, call for the results. I'm aware of these rapid tests that did show some positive results among hundreds done. And in Berlin, there were very few. Of course, fentanyl is around in the form of like pain patches that people cut up, cut open, and maybe that's how these results were created. But it doesn't, even for heroin, it doesn't seem that there's a contamination or adulteration issue right now. That might change, as you said. There's this fear, heroin supply being cut off. Apparently, it's not noticeable so far. And also, this is hard to predict. I mean, yes, the Taliban curtailed poppy production in Afghanistan, but now Myanmar is producing more heroin. Like, someone will step in if there's the capacity. And whether and when fentanyl will show up in Europe is unclear. We're keeping a close watch, but right now there's absolutely no reason to panic.
Yes, so you showed some of the pills who have abnormally high doses, and I was wondering, did you get some research into why that must be? Because from a production standpoint, economically, that's not very smart. So what could cause these abnormally high dosages?
Yeah, I briefly touched on it. I think it's mainly that production got easier and cheaper, so more people entered the market, and then they competed with each other. And these drug-checking warnings serve as endorsements or advertisements, like without them intending that, for certain pills. And so that, I think, caused people to compete to try to have the highest dose pill to be the popular design. Those two are my theories. But I think, yeah, I think it's expected that this race would end at some point where it doesn't become economical for them anymore to keep raising the amount.
We have a question from the internet.
Yes, hello. Question from the internet. Are there also tests done on LSD?
Yes, they do test blotters, and they publish warnings. I'm not sure for LSD. I'm not sure if there's also results that they don't publish the warnings about. We would need to inquire. I haven't really looked at that data. There again, I've noticed that the average result seems to be less than people assume it is. So people assume a tab will generally be like 100 micrograms, but it turns out it's more like 70-ish. Which also might cause people to wrongly assume that they want to take a higher dose when they're actually getting a lower than expected dose. But I haven't really looked into it much.
Yeah, thank you. I do have another question, which is about, do you have any numbers on how many drug samples are tested in Berlin on average per substance?
I could look that up in my database. I don't know it by heart. I know that cathinones are by far number one. MDMA follows. They weren't expecting that. But it makes sense with the weird situation with cathinones that people would be more inclined to test them because they have more unusual experiences with them. Everything else, there's not a huge amount of tests. So not much LSD. Overall, they've done maybe about 3,000 tests and published 1,500 warnings or something. So the rate of warnings published is actually quite high. I think it's actually more than 50%. I think they said that it's like 60% of tests result in a warning.
Thank you.
Hello, you mentioned 2CB and 5-MeO-MIPT, among other things. When I was a teenager, another drug was pretty popular. It was called 2CE with an E at the end. It has since been criminalized. Do you know by any chance whether or not it's still popular or in wide use?
I don't think it's popular. There's the 2C class of substances, these Dutch research chemical shops where each individual substance would have to be made illegalized. They sell a lot of 2C variants at this point. But 2CB seems to be the one that crossed into the mainstream. It used to be a research chemical and quite rare and unknown a couple years ago. And now, like most club drug dealers, will offer 2CB pills as well. So whether that's for like rational reasons that people enjoyed it most or just happened somehow, I can't tell you. But I don't think 2CE, was it? Is prevalent right now. Certainly, I think these, like the more obscure research chemicals, are very rarely tested in drug checking Berlin.
Hi. First of all, thank you for the talk. My question is a little bit loaded, but I'm a little bit confused about the data significance of the molds. As you said yourself, anybody and everybody can buy those molds, and from my experience or from what I've heard, a lot of users treat molds as like a brand or a product, but they aren't that. It's just a random form they come in. Anything can be in there. And I was wondering what your outlook on that is, because I understand that from the testing perspective, that is a natural way to differentiate between or categorize the products, but it seems like a really flawed outlook on the analysis from the start.
I would agree that like the way the media reported on it was certainly completely wrong, as if it's like one specific product. So you're asking whether it even makes sense to use that as a default grouping when analyzing the pills. I think in this case, that's where my analysis started. So the press said there's a blue Punisher and it's dangerous, and I wanted to look into that. I do think for the rarer ones, it becomes more predictive, the data. But you're absolutely right. For example, from batch to batch, the same producer with the same mold and the same color can have a completely different potency because they just don't have high standards of production and they're just mixing stuff together and not probably doing drug checking themselves on their products. And one thing is ordering a mold from China, but of course you can just get one pill and make an imprint and start producing your own. But I think also the visualization I made, for example, with these, what was it? Green Heinekens and gray Teslas does show like certain outliers with a certain different mold. So I think even spreading that awareness that this is not enough to group by color and logo of company. Why is it always like some luxury brands that they put on there? Why not like fun animals or something? Anyway, getting distracted. Spreading the awareness that at least you would have to look at the specifics of the mold is useful to spread. That's one of the reasons I haven't really published this. It was just having fun with data. Um, But of course, the problem with, like, most people won't use drug checking. And so I do think it makes sense as part of different harm reduction strategies to look up your pill. And if there's multiple that look exactly the same that were recently tested and are kind of consistent in their results in your region, then that's a pointer. It doesn't guarantee what you have, but it's better than just taking it and wishing for the best. So, but point taken.
Are there further questions here, over there? Okay, this will, no, this, ha. There is someone more reachable for me.
Just a rough estimate of the cost-price ratio. How much does it cost in a comparison to what is the street price?
You mean wholesale price of these drugs versus street?
No, no, there's a single, of single pieces. I'm just trying to find out the profit margins. Of the distribution and of the manufacturers. Who earns more? Yeah?
So obviously that's not data that we see in the drug checking results. The EU Drugs Agency does have some like yearly statistics, and they do include presumed wholesale price for like a kilo of MDMA or something, or like 1,000 pills. So yeah, Google that, EU Drugs Agency MDMA or something, and you should find this data. I don't know exactly where they get it from and how accurate it is. But yeah, I think like this, just off the top of my head, but like at each step of the chain, there's like a factor of five-ish or something that the price increases. Very different depending on substance and how long the chain is, and if it's cocaine that was smuggled from South America versus something that was shipped from China.
Hey, so it's a bit out of scope of party drugs, but when I read the fine print of these drug checking programs, I always find that they test for everything, but they categorically rule out anabolic steroids. And I was just wondering if there's a chemical reason for that, or if they don't want to associate with these drugs.
Good question. I would think that it's mostly a policy decision. I mean, they had to fight hard for political agreements to even put this in place. And I think they had to define a very clear target market and argue to politicians a very clear use. The main argument is that this allows them to get in touch with substance users before they show up in like the support system. So this, like, as part of the dropping off your substance, you get a little private conversation where someone checks in with your drug use in an unobtrusive way, and that's like how they argue to the city that it's worth funding. Apparently not so much that there's aggregate data that can tell us public health, but it's all about the individual contact to people. And I guess contact to people who inject steroids, not that high on the priorities list, or maybe like not as much of a economical factor for a city like Berlin compared to the club scene that they want to make sure is more safe. Can only speculate for the reasons, but yeah, they also have very little capacity actually. Although the bottleneck is this like counseling talk and not the actual chemical testing facilities, but they want to always include that, so they can only accept a bunch of samples per week. And so I think they want to limit the group of people who come and this type of substances you can test. So you can't test medication, you can't test, there's a bunch of, you can't even test weed unless you expect a synthetic cannabinoid. I don't know how you would argue that suspicion, but yeah, it's very, very narrow what they test and what they don't test.
Are there more questions in the audience? So, oh yeah, in the middle. Perfect.
Hey, thank you for the talk. I just have a little question. What do you think is the variance on the drug dose in the same batch of drugs? Do you think it's like pretty narrow, or is the variance even within the same batch pretty high?
That's an excellent question that came to my mind also when I was looking at these results. And I actually suggested to someone at Drug Checking Berlin, like, don't you want to like test 10 pills from the same batch at the same time and see what the variance is? The answer was like, they think that the customs should do that because they find big batches of pills and they're in the best position to do that. So they don't see that as their mission. I would be highly interested. I mean, you could just do it. You could buy 10 pills and then go to drug checking a couple times because they only allow 2 samples per drop off. would be interesting data. I think the variation between batches, like even same producer, same mold, different week, will be higher than between individual pills. I don't think there's a ton of like this, what do they call it, chocolate chip effect, where like one corner of the mixture has much more than the other one. I would expect between batches to be more variation, but unanswered question at this point.
Do you have insights in whether or not authorities do testing when, for example, on some borders they find millions of pills? That would be the best point where to check, like, yes, big batches.
Yeah, so for sure, anything that's that causes, like, creates a criminal case, they need to specifically know which substance. I'm sure they don't test every pill, so I think they test one and are assume that their others will be similar. But yeah, that's the forensic lab of the city that does these tests, also does tests for the police in such cases, or for the health service if there's like a death and they have to find out which substance is found in a body. But yeah, they, at least the customs and police apparently aren't very interested in publishing data that makes drugs safer. I wonder why.
Are there more questions? Do I see any more rising hands? Oh yeah, there.
Yes, thank you very much. Do you have an idea how much a round of testing does cost? So we know, we just learned that the street price and then wholesale price are different, but what does it cost to do those testings?
I couldn't tell you really. No, I don't want to speculate, so. I mean, the equipment is there, the people working are there. It's just a matter of their workload, probably more than any like chemicals you would need for that or something. It's mostly man hours. And especially, like I said, man hours of counseling the people who do the drop-off that are the cost factor.
Further questions? Further hands up in the air now. Okay, everyone is sinking that data in. So I would say let's give a big round of applause to our speaker. Thank you.